At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep.
Today is the last day I won't have a camera, I promise, because I'm getting my computer later today, my good laptop, and I'll have it at home. While I ride out my quarantine. Welcome to Pre-Market Prep, though. I'm Spencer. There is Dennis. Joel will be on in just a sec. Today, the theme of the show is problems that technology can't fix, whether it's Southwest Airlines canceling flights this weekend for pick your reason, really, because they said everything. It could be inflation. It could be supply chains. But that's the theme of the show, problems that technology cannot fix. We'll talk Alibaba, which is higher again this morning somehow, some way. So that trade is still on, the trade from last week. We'll talk to Tim Kwas at 8:35, as we always do every Monday. And then I think we're joined. Yeah, Matt Hammond will join the show at 9. Yes, 9 o'clock today to preview the weekend in IPO land and give us his thoughts on the market as we head into earnings season. Can you believe it? Earnings season starts this week. We get the banks. Is it Wednesday and Thursday, I think? I think it's Wednesday and Thursday. We're going to get the banks. So good morning, good morning, good morning. Joel is here. Before I bring Joel on and before we bring Joel's charts on, I want to remind you all that the next Pre-Market Prep Saturday extravaganza is this Saturday, this week. It's in, 5 days from now? Yeah, October 16th. 9 a.m. Eastern Time, premarketprep.com. That's how you find it, premarketprep.com. To learn more, Joel, Dennis, Rob Friesen, 3.5 hours, Saturday morning. Also, the Benzinga Cannabis Conference is this week, Thursday and Friday. Go to bzcannabis.com to learn more about that. Now, Joel, we'll bring on your charts, sir. Good morning, and tell us how we're doing this morning.
Good morning, Spencer. We're in the red by 21 and a half handles at 43.61. Crude's making a big move to the upside. That's not good for inflation. It's up 243 at 81.79. Gold is in the red by 230 at 17.55.10. So much for inflation hedge. Silver's in the red by 13 cents at 22.57. Bitcoin's having a good day, working its way up towards 60K. That's up $1,915 at 57.095. And Ethereum taking a little breather, down 49.75 at 36.0950.
And that awkward silence. Hello.
No, that's me. Sure. Sorry. I'm trying to. my computer, when I go on mute like that, my computer is slow to bring me back. So I apologize. First off, before we go any further, we have to wish Dennis a happy Thanksgiving. Today is Canadian Thanksgiving. I'm not sure what that means. I just know it's a thing. So,
okay. Well, it's the same as your Thanksgiving. It's just on a different day.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
You give thanks.
Okay. Okay. So,
it's Thanksgiving.
Okay. So, happy Thanksgiving. Thank you
for being
here
with us.
And
I work for you on my Thanksgiving. Look at me.
I know. The bond market is closed, but Dennis is not.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I'm here for you no matter what. The bond market is closed. The Canadian markets are closed, but the U.S. markets are open, and I'm here for you to tell you my thoughts. And you're not going to like them if you're long tech stocks, I'll tell you that much.
So happy Thanksgiving, happy Columbus Day to all. Let's start with like the headline of the weekend, and then it'll go into that conversation, which was Southwest Airlines had all kinds of problems. If you're flying them, I'm sure you know about it. They canceled over 1,800 flights this weekend, dramatically more than any other airline. American canceled 63, Delta canceled 3, United canceled 6. And Southwest basically blamed it on, they basically took a dart and they threw it at the dartboard as to why they blamed. They blamed it on staffing shortages. They blamed it on extreme weather. And they blamed it on air traffic control regulations. And that led to almost 30% of their schedule on Sunday getting canceled.
I was reading it was, you know, the conspiracy theorists are out there saying that all the, that there's a, they don't want to mandate the vaccine. So you had a walkout of a lot of pilots that don't want the vaccine mandates. I'm not sure if there's truth to that or not. But and has Southwest commented on any of that?
It's like anything. It's like I'm sure there are some truth to it. I know like the airlines just, I don't remember who, I think it was Southwest and United just had to laid off a bunch of people who didn't want to get the vaccine. But I don't know. That's not what they said.
That's not what Southwest is saying.
That's not what Southwest said.
But that's right? What everybody on Twitter is saying. So all I'm right. not sure what is true or what is not true here. And you know, this is an issue though, obviously. The one thing we can say is you have seen a little bit of a reopening trade in the last few weeks. It has fizzled out in the last few trading days. You can look at American Airlines starting to approach back to the lows of the move. LUV has been one of the, it had a 10% move, over a 10% move in a week and a half. Now we're pulling back. I don't know where this headline goes. It's not good when they're canceling flights. It's going to piss off a lot of people. But not only that, it's like, okay, well, you know, what is the real reason why? Are you covering up the real reason why? Or are those real reasons something to get concerned that there's going to be more flight cancellations? Because that's not good. You know, well, obviously.
I don't know. I think like the fact that it was so concentrated on one airline, Southwest is not the only airline company 2000, that
2,000 flights they canceled though.
Right, right.
So, I mean, I'm saying it's not good for Southwest Airlines.
Right, right. But the fact that it wasn't, the fact that it's the problems were mostly confined to them when they're not the only airline to mandate vaccines.
So you think that's maybe not the case? It's just tweeting.
I'm sure there's maybe some truth to that, but I don't think that's probably the main reason. And
Jake in the chat says he has a family member that works in there. He thinks it's 100% about the airlines. I saw a lot of people talking about the vaccines. I saw a lot of people talking about it. So I don't know what's true and what's not true, but
well, all we know regardless is again of all the flights canceled this weekend, 99% of them were from one airline. So never a good thing. That's why the stock is down this morning, I would presume.
Yeah. And they're in a lot of people, you know, obviously when you're canceling those, that amount of flights, there's a lot of people that get stranded. Obviously it's holiday weekend up here in Canada. But you know, it's all weekend. People are traveling, doing things. And obviously, you know, it ticks you off when your flight gets canceled and then you hear about 1,000 flights getting canceled. Like, holy. So obviously stock gets slammed here today. When you got these kind of headlines, it depends what the next headline looks like. Now all of a sudden you got headline risk on this, Joel. And you know, we talk about different stocks. I try to often trade away from the news. If I'm trading technically, I try to trade away from the news for the most part. Because we know when you got a next headline, you can say, oh, I got a nice setup here. Well, bad headline comes, and that can drive it down. Headlines trump all. So, you know, you had a stock that was trending higher. You had a stock that was showing some life. And now all of a sudden, bad headline hits, and the stock, you know, is going to probably challenge, you know, that 50-88 low from a week and a half ago. So what are you saying, Joel?
Maybe not today. That'd be down another $1.60. If you've been waiting for a gap fill here, this little gap on September 30th down to 52 and a quarter, You did get it in the pre-market. Who knows if you're going to get it in the regular session. But that, if you look at the upper right chart, I mean, man, you're falling into no man's land here. And Dennis mentioned a pair of lows at 51. So if you want to get it on the cheap, you know, maybe not today, but, you know, over the next couple days. Also, Southwest has a history of, like, coming out with some bad news and then coming out with some more bad news. And, you know, 18, they do.
Okay.
So, you know, if you want to hang out for that $51 area, I think you'll get a look at it.
I think you'll get a look at it eventually, too.
And also, you know, I'm not sure what their hedging strategies are, but you talk about, you know, the biggest expense for airlines is fuel costs. And yeah, crude trading up. Yeah, crude's trading up 240. Like I said, I don't know their hedging strategies. So a lot of negative things here in the airlines. Where the reopening, we discussed the reopening trade, where that's at. I don't know. But hands off on the airlines today. If you want to get cheap, put a bid out there at 51.05. If you're looking for a gap fill on the upside, you need to get to 53.52. So I don't know. That would take a big pop.
The people making money, and this is a good segue into our whole next probably 25-minute discussion, the people who are making money trading right now are the people who are buying commodities, who are buying physical assets. If you're the user of commodities, that's not what you want to be in right now, because you are seeing inflation, something rampant in certain areas. I do believe we're going to see $100 oil here in the near future. Where are we now on crude?
The front month contract's 81.74. Yeah,
I think you're going to see $100. I mean, why not? You know, and I'm not a big crude long-term bull, but I will tell you right now, this is the type of environment where you're needing physical stuff. And I was talking, obviously, Thanksgiving weekend here in Canada. You're seeing lots of family. Lots of my wife's family is in trades. And you start talking with them and talking about different things. But even just talking with another friend, he had a Tacoma that he bought 4 years ago, 2016 or 2017 Tacoma. Goes to the deal. He bought it for $42,000 4 years ago, brand new. Goes to the dealership talking a trade-in. You know how much they'll give him for his truck? So he paid $42,000 for the truck 4 years ago. Guess what the dealership will give him for it? The dealership.
We know. We'll let the
check. Yeah, you guys know. $38,000. So a four-year-old truck now, you can get almost what you paid for it 4 years ago. That's called when we're having problems getting trucks. That's called demand and short supply. And Mitch, you're in the background. You were saying the same thing was happening with you, so you can verify this conversation. Mitch, are you hiding back there?
He's lurking. I just want to say that Luke is in the chat saying he had his flight canceled over the weekend. So
there
I don't
you go.
Know where
so it's hitting at home here, too.
I don't know where Luke's at. I mean, he might be stuck in Florida.
Luke's stranded.
Maybe. Yeah, so used cars, right? So used cars, but we know that, right? We know that's big.
But it's not mind-blowing that you know, you think about what they used to always say, you know, even go back 3-4 years ago. You buy your brand new car, as soon as you drive it off the lot, it loses like a quarter of its value. Yeah. Not in COVID, not in this new environment here now. Now you get to drive it 4 years and it holds its value. What are we in, man?
The crazy thing is you saw this happening, four or five months ago, right?
Started happening, but it's going rampant right now. Like,
I know.
There's people paying above sticker prices for stuff.
So it hasn't worked itself out in 5 months. That's my point. It hasn't
worked itself out. Is it going to work itself out? That's the question. Like, you know, the supply chain, it's not just, you know, chips. It's everything. Like talking to, you know, a plumber friend as well over the weekend. Same thing. Can't get, you know, can't get the Apex or whatever it is, the piping. Can't get that too. The ABS piping. Can't get that either. You know, they can't get a lot of things. So they're using different things. They're using more expensive things. I mean, you know, it's an issue. So,
Dennis,
you know, it's not just an issue.
Dennis, did they say why?
I don't know if anybody knows why on a lot of this stuff.
They don't know?
Like, I don't know. Do we even know why, like, the chip shortage? Do we know all the reasons what's behind? We always talk about it and who's impacted by it. Do we really know, like, the deep down reasons why? Is it all demand? What, well, or is it all just we can't ship it over? Is it all stuck on ships? Is that what it is?
Well, for the chips, it was one of those things where like demand went to zero and then it came back like overnight, right? Like so that everyone shut down and then all the manufacturers and they weren't prepared to ramp back up, right? So now they're playing catch up. And also you had that fire at the factory that makes half of the chips for cars in the world in Japan that didn't help things. So maybe it's just a question of like everyone prepared for a long winter during COVID, and when demand came back 2 months later, then everyone was caught off guard. But you're right, Dennis. No one really. I'm sure that's only one reason.
There's a number of reasons.
Yeah, there's a dozen reasons.
And then you can go back into the labor shortage, probably one of the main reasons for all of it, because we have a labor issue. We have a labor issue.
Yep.
Where there's a lot of people who obviously are not going to work for minimum wage anymore, or they're not going to work there isn't the demand to do it. And COVID did change the mindset too, where family is more focused. So if you were close, I talked to my neighbor. Now here's a prime example, 3 years from retirement, COVID hits, like not taking early retirement. So there, you're seeing that, you know, where people are close to retirement, and they're like, okay, I'm out too. Because you know what, family's more important. You start to like prioritize what's important in life. This whole, you know, pandemic did that, changed the mindset to a certain extent too. A lot of people live to work, but now you're seeing a lot more people, you know, that's saying, "I just work to live," and you know what, I want to live. So
you know where you're seeing the biggest shortages and the most concerning.
Where's that?
The Costco.
Health.
That's scary too.
Healthcare.
Yeah, James with the big word stagflation.
You can't get nurses in hospitals now. They are they're actually paying travel nurses. Like I didn't believe the figure that Lisa told me that they were paying people to go out to, you know, Billings, Montana or something, but people are like they're moving, uprooting their family for 3 to 6 months. And they're making more in that time period than they did in 2 or 3 years, just because of the shortage. That's the biggest economic impact that people don't realize from COVID is the toll that it's taking on our healthcare system. And people, who wants to be a doctor now? Who wants to be a nurse now? So you have shortages now, and you have people not wanting to go into the industry. I mean, that is my biggest concern.
The question is, is this all transitory? Is this really all transitory? And like I'm asking, you know, chat, you guys, do we get through all these shortages? Do we get through this labor shortage? And we look out, like, could take a crystal ball and try to project it 12 months out, 24 months out. Are we past these problems? And do we go back to business as usual? Or is this a new world where it's actually going to be, you know, inflation? We're going to have inflation involved. We're going to have labor shortages for a longer period of time. And, you know, the big word that James just said, stagflation, is that on the table here? I know you brought it up last week too, Joel. It's a word that we have not used, you know, and I have not, you know, heard from in probably decades. You think about stagflation. And if you've never heard of stagflation before, we can just go and give you the actual meaning of it. Textbook. Just read it so I don't butcher it. But, you know, stagflation. Obviously, increasing prices is a big part of it, as I Google it. So a situation in which the inflation rate is high, the economic growth rate slows, and unemployment remains steadily high. Well, the unemployment rate is low, but the main reason the unemployment rate is lower
than it was. It's still high.
Okay, we can say it's lower, but it's not high for one reason, is that because to be included in the unemployment and included in labor figures, you have to be seeking work. We have a lot of people who aren't seeking work. So maybe, you know, it's not as high of employment, but it's not going to show up in unemployment stats if a lot of people are saying, I don't want to go back to work. So that's, you know, what throws off the stats too. So is stagflation the question? Because we don't really have, you know, steadily high unemployment here right now. But at the same time, if we have a lot of people that were willing to work 2 years ago and now they don't want to work, is that really, you know, indicative of, you know, just everybody that can get a job? And they can. I mean, you can get a job if you want to get a job, but. Is stagflation on the table?
I don't know. I think part of what makes this so difficult is, like, unlike with the pandemic, like, there was a lot of unknowns last spring, but the one thing we did know was, like, hey, if we ever get a vaccine, then that will change the game. And then it took 6 months, but we got a vaccine, right? But with this, literally no one knows. Like, nobody knows. And that's part of the problem, is because no one knows, there are no expectations. You can't say you can't set the bar and then try to come in above or below, because there is no bar. Like, what are you going to say? 6 months? That's a guess. That's a guess. It'll all be better in 6 months. We have no idea. There is no frame of reference for anyone. All you have is the word transitory, which just means temporary, but temporary is
temporary, can go on for bad, and there's nothing else that they can say. We've said this on the show a dozen times in the last month. There's nothing else they can say. They can't come and say this is sticky and sticking around forever, because then they have no excuse. They need to start jacking rates, because the only way you can really control inflation is to start raising interest rates. And you can't raise interest rates because the whole entire U.S. economy, and the world economy for that matter, unless you're in China, is built on debt. So you can't start raising rates significantly. You can raise them 0.25%. You can raise them 0.5%. Is that going to slow down inflation? Probably not. Start raising it 2%, 3%, 4%. It does. But then everybody loses their homes. Then you got major problems going on. I mean, they're really stuck. I don't even see the solution here. That's why they keep just digging the hole.
Okay. So now here's the question. Because no one really knows, right? It'll work itself out when it works itself out, whether it takes 2 months or 2 years. Who knows? But are we in an environment now where technology stocks, because technology companies have been your best play for the last 12 years, where they are not your leader? Because these are all most of them are problems that are irrelevant of technology, right? Technology can't fix a supply chain shortage. It can't fix a labor shortage. Maybe can a little bit, but it can't. These are problems that are not solved by a new app. You know what I mean? Or like a Zoom video conference call, right? It's like, it's bigger than that. So the question is, do you want to, like Dennis talked about commodities, right? Being in an inflationary environment, do you want to own technology stocks right now? And when I say right now, I mean like going out 12 months. Because we all,
man, everyone. Listening to you two guys go on, I don't want to own a share of anything.
Yeah, but that doesn't work though. If you go to cash, Joel, you are definitely getting killed. So you know, I have traders in our firm, Bright Trading. They make pretty good money, and they're like, I got to get buy. They're buying, like, they're still buying houses. They're still buying stuff. They're like scared to be, and they're buying crypto. They're scared to be in cash. There is literally a lot of people that are actually scared to be in cash, and I'm kind of one of them. I mean, I have quite a bit of cash sitting there, and I'm like, it's been the wrong play because, yeah, you know, the markets haven't really gone anywhere, but my cash is getting just slowly, deteriorates in value because of inflation. So the safest play, really, if you want to fight inflation, is a commodity trade. It's to own stuff, real estate. It's to own stuff. But then again, you're paying, you know, in a bubble. You're paying in a bubble pricing for some of this stuff. But that's been where the money's been made, in physical assets. Used cars. Who makes money on their used car? Who makes money on their used car? We had three people when we were having that conversation in the chat saying they sold the car that they bought for more than what they paid for. Who makes money? What environment are we in when you make money on your used car? Used boats started last year. It's incredible.
We had a couple cars come up leases over the last few years. And I was just, you know, and I looked at this is really before, a couple of them we bought before COVID. And I was like, and I never do that. Everyone's like, oh, you can't, you know, you're getting ripped off if you're buying a car after you lease it for a couple of years. And I'm like, I don't care. I own the car. And then we did that. I mean, we also have very, very low mileage on them. So, yeah, and Dana is going to do the same thing. Actually, you know, she's got a lease coming up. She goes, yeah, I would get a new car. There's no cars out there. You know, boom, throw the cash down and drive it into the ground. But man, you guys, I mean,
okay, eventually, an ARK investment is going to be, if we do stay, if the inflation stays, that's the way wrong. So it's going to be high growth tech that gets hit the most. And why, again? Because I want to explain it to people who are new to the show. We've explained this before, but if you have an inflationary environment, high growth tech is a play on future earnings. those future earnings are worth a lot less in a high inflationary environment, because cash today, because you can spend the cash today, is worth a hell of a lot more than cash tomorrow. So when you're buying these high growth plays that don't, they're just burning cash, those aren't the what does well in an inflationary environment, because those future earnings are worth less. And that's why you're seeing tech stocks, some of the future, you know, some of the smaller tech stocks really struggle in this environment, where obviously you're seeing the commodity stocks like ExxonMobil and Chevron, and, you know, the steel stocks have come back off a certain extent, but they're still up significantly. And full disclosure, I'd be a buyer of steel stocks right now, because I think they pulled back enough. I do think they start to eventually go back to the highs and the move. That's where, if you believe that the inflation isn't going away, that's, you know, if you think this inflation, and Cathie Wood's been on CNBC and she thinks it is transitory, and that's why she's positioning herself and buying these high, and she might be right. If the inflation goes away, she'll end up getting paid for that call. So right now, your investing strategy, long-term investing strategy, is all about whether you believe this inflation is, you know, going to be sticky and stick around for a long time, or whether it really is transitory. And 1 year from now, you know, we actually have falling prices, or we have, you know, we get back to business as usual. I don't know if anybody has the answer to that.
They'll go up. They'll go up, but when they start to come down, they won't come down at the same rate that they went up.
It's hard for prices to go down. It's labor. So one thing, people are asking more money for their jobs and they're getting it. How many people take a pay cut? You don't often. You might be able to get your gas price down a little bit, but you don't get a lot of people taking a pay cut. So I think any increase in labor costs is permanent. You're not going to get the labor costs back down. So as you increase, you know, people are paying more. They have to get the people. If they don't want to work, they got to offer more money. I mean, those are more permanent pricing. Now, you know, is the price of lumber come down? Yes. Has the price of some other commodities come down? Yes. Some, you know, obviously oil? No. Oil's starting to break out and go up again here. And I've never been an oil bull, but I'll tell you, in this environment, in an inflationary environment, oil's probably going to continue to go up.
Maybe the bottom line here is you got to own physical things. I don't think the answer is not going all cash. Just to be clear, I don't think that's the answer. But maybe it's a bad play. Maybe it's owning physical things over digital things for now.
But the digital assets are doing pretty good too, because crypto is the new gold, and you can see it. This is incredible in itself too. And every single economics book is a fail on this one, because the best inflation hedge is supposed to be gold and silver. And this has just been incredible. We've got inflation like we haven't seen in 25 years, and gold and silver is going down. I mean, that's incredible in itself. Is there a potential catch-up trade eventually in gold and silver? And we had this question last week, or is it just the fact that maybe gold and silver isn't the gold and silver it used to be?
Yeah. Wait, how long is it until gold starts trending on Twitter? Right, because everyone wants to play the catch-up trade in gold. That's going to happen. That's going to happen this year.
Right now, I mean,
gold is cheap
relative to itself. I mean, we're sitting near the 2020 or the far off 2021 lows.
I'm calling it now. That's going to happen this year.
So should we be buying gold?
Yeah,
well, I don't own any. Full disclosure, I own
me neither.
I zero.
Me neither.
I don't know if I really want to. I own a little bit of crypto. Look at the Bitcoin. Doesn't look like it wants to go back down. Looks like it wants to make new highs to me, that chart, when I'm looking at it.
I don't know.
This isn't a very interesting conversation. Obviously, we have our investors hat on big time here right now. We're trying to project out, which isn't my cup of tea, you know, projecting prices a year from now. But it's an interesting discussion. So, I don't know. There's lots of, you know, the textbook would say, if we're really going into this and this inflation sticky, the textbook would say, economics textbook would say, buy gold, buy silver. But that hasn't been working. And why, if it hasn't been working up to this point in time, is it going to just start working all of a sudden? Maybe there's a catch-up trade, or maybe it's just not what it used to be.
I bet you there's a catch-up trade only because it's the most obvious thing in the world. Let's go to China for a second here, because that trade, I don't know how long I thought it was going to go on for, but it's still going. I guess I thought maybe 2 or 3 days, but we're on week two now, and it's still going this morning.
Yeah, what a turnaround. I mean, Alibaba, we called that. I did not think it was going to go up. I said eventually it's going to have a 10-point squeeze. Had it 2 days later. That 10-point squeeze has now turned into a 30-point squeeze. It was too easy on the shorts. Now, all of a sudden, it's like everybody's looking at Alibaba thinking, man, I want a pullback in that thing to get in, including myself. I have some in the long-term portfolio, but I wanted more on for a trade, and I never did it should have did it, and hopefully some people did. But wow, I mean, there's been a turnaround not only obviously in Alibaba, but you go to the EEM, you go to the FXIs, maybe a better example. And I mean, we're up significantly 3 days in a row now. So this is, you know, September was a really ugly month for the FXI, and basically we've almost got all the losses back from September in the course of 3 days. So nice bounce.
I saw the name of the company on CNBC, like Mertran or something like that. They were expecting like a huge fine on that company, and it was only half of what I believe a Chinese technology company. So once again, you know, it's the news. I mean, absence of bad news and or good news is what's propelling the Alibaba here.
See Jack Ma?
I mentioned that. When did I mention that? Riding on a scooter down Main Street.
Where's the picture of him on social media? He was on Instagrams when he caught him on Instagram. That's why it's going up. He was riding on a scooter.
That's
a joke. It's not true.
The 4 a.m. open was a little bit overzealous there. We got over 172, and now we're leaking a little bit. I'm not sure if there's anything on the dailies at 172. Once again, just a news-driven market here. If we did get a pop to 171.64, just technically speaking, that was your high on September 10th. But just starting to come in a little bit, it looks like that pre-market high looks safe, and then man, now you just got another daily gap to way down here to 162.78. So kind of hard unless you're just taking this thing overnight to catch these moves. And sometimes you catch it the right way. Spencer, you were talking on the show on Friday, like once you just lay out a short at some level in this thing, and it's just like, man,
yeah,
it's come down so high, you know. I don't know. Maybe 172 was the number, but it's coming in. Maybe you get a nice pullback. Maybe somehow you make a high in this area. I don't know, 172, 173 or something. Then you get some more bad news and you drift lower and you get a chance to buy a little bit of a discount. But since Charlie made that purchase, we talked about that, I think, on
Tuesday or Wednesday.
I wrote Triple D's call up on that one. You had to find risk down there, and now – that defined risk, 141, 142 is when we were talking about it. And that defined risk is looking pretty good right now.
Shorting volume now is the equivalent of buying it like a month ago or 2 months ago, right?
It's hard. Like, yeah, you're shorting a rocket ship. You're in rocket ship mode. I don't like shorting rocket ships. I mean, we were up 10, up 10, up basically up 10 bucks every day for 3 days, go 140 to 170. Incredible move. It looks to me like that 178. But I thought it might stall out at 160 and then just cut like that level through like a hot knife through butter for a rocket ship blasting through the ceiling. 178, 179, I would think would slow it down, but who knows? I mean, I'm still long it, long-term account, pullbacks, maybe you get interested, but I'm more interested in buying the commodity stocks on pullbacks, to be honest. I'm more interested in buying, I mean, some of the steel stocks have not, you know, like U.S. Steel and CLF.
Yeah, what is that? Look at that. That's an ugly chart.
The steel stocks have not participated. They have not been participating. And maybe, you know, and let's give them credit where credit is due. I mean, Cleveland Cliffs, let's go to this one, was $5 in 2020. And it went to $25. So, you know, at a certain point, you can say, oh, yeah, it's trading three or five times earnings. But these is, you know, we've said this before, is this as good as it gets for this environment for steel as well? But I don't know. I just think pricing of commodities, including steel, may continue to go higher. And obviously, then you look at those charts and you think, okay, well, if you wanted a dip, you got a dip on these things.
COF had news today. They're buying Ferrous Processing and Trading for a total enterprise value of $775 million. So they're making an acquisition this morning. But I don't know. Oh, wait, that's Capital One, Joel.
Well, what did you say?
CLF.
Oh, CLF. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
We're sticking with the commodity.
What a segue. I'm like, what?
Cleveland Cliffs. Yeah. So, okay. I don't know. Like, that monthly looks pretty good to me. I don't know. No?
Still trending higher. I would say if you are putting it on, we always say you can put any trade on as long as you know where your out is. It's very defined. I mean, you have, look back the last 3 months, back in June, 1895, July low. 1851, recent low in September. 1886, 1913. You can call it four lows right in the same area. So you got below 18, maybe you cut it out. I'm long, full disclosure, I'm long Cleveland Cliffs. I've stuck it in the longer term account. I'm almost tempted to buy more.
And right, I feel like I need the takeaway from this show is I need more physical world exposure. I don't know what yet though, but I don't own any oil. And
maybe
any
this
gold.
Is the top on all this.
I don't own any
have
steel.
The upper collapse coming, but
that's the other thing you got to look is like, you know, okay, well, the commodities, no one's going to be able to afford the stuff and build the stuff, right?
Well, eventually,
no, they will.
But now, there is an argument there. Eventually, if prices go up enough, it does hit demand.
No.
I mean, it's the same thing like with lumber. Well, that's why lumber got silly and people stopped building decks and stopped building stuff until it came down to reasonable pricing. So
I have four words for you, Joel. Ready? Buy now, pay later.
There you go.
With everything.
Back to a firm. Look, you can bring this right back into a conversation.
I'm bringing it back to a firm.
Stock, and about the stock that Spencer, man, I know, I guess we can't use stops in this environment, but I tell you, this stock, is maybe you think about what technology stocks have done, and they've done most of them have done a hell of a lot of nothing in the last, you know, 3 months. It's been not that great. You can bring up ARKK and you can say it's not been a great environment for growth tech. Like, unless you are in a firm, and a firm has just been an absolute monster. We talked about this on the show at like $65, and I was like, I should buy some of that, and I never did. And then Spencer actually did buy some of it, and he got stopped out. But regardless, I mean, $141 a day, stock made a new all time high again on Friday. No point worrying about, you know, when stocks make new all-time highs, you keep riding them.
I bought at 100, sold at 90, like the genius that I am.
It got close to the all-time high. He actually had an all-time high at a little bit higher, 146.90. But that was back in February.
Oh, my gosh, Joel, you're right. I didn't even realize. The firm had been hit so hard, it was back after the stock had its IPO. 3 days after, it looks like. Mm-hmm. Not maybe 3 days after on the weeklies, but 5 weeks after.
But the other thing, too, is it pay later. Is are you paying inflation? Are you like...
Yeah, that doesn't sound that great. You're paying more money later.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, no, but if your price is locked in, so maybe it's not. You're not, actually, because your price is locked in.
I'm asking.
I don't know how it works. I usually pay off my credit card every month, so I don't know how.
Yeah, hey, if your price is locked in, you're getting a better deal.
I mean, somebody was saying to me, I was
maybe
like,
that's it.
I was joking online for that business, but you were joking it too. Like, the best business model could be, you know, buy now, pay never. And then somebody said, well, that's MasterCard's business model. I was like, oh, it actually is. They love that when you buy a new credit card and you never pay it off and pay those 18% rates.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's bring Tim and get his thoughts on all of this inflation talk, and he will talk market structure with us here right now.
Let's do it. Good morning, sir.
I look forward to that every Monday, Dennis.
I have to do it for the Bushwhackers. Tim.
The day is not it just doesn't get off to a good start unless you're doing that. So
it's really dark outside where you are, so we can't tell where you are right now. I'm assuming you're in the mountains.
I am in Steamboat. Yep, Steamboat Springs. And I'll tell you, it was just spectacular yesterday. So that direction is Mount Werner, which is about 10,600 feet, and it was snow covered and a little crown of clouds around it. And yet about halfway down the mountain, the aspens are still orange and yellow and red. It was just, I mean, I get to be here all the time and I'm still just stunned by how beautiful it is. So that's awesome. Where I am. Yeah. Yeah. I see you've got Jay Powell with you today.
Yeah, we had a special guest on the show here, and we were asking
just
him
for
all
today.
Morning.
It's just for today.
It's well, good thing you're talking about buy now, pay later then, because that's the, I mean, that is the Fed's mantra.
That's true too.
Spending, right?
That
Don't
is
worry
too.
About the cost, just spend. That's
Spend. What? We've had a long discussion here. We've been talking inflation. We've been talking, obviously, a lot of things that, you know, are out of our control with the supply chain. We've been talking about labor shortages. We haven't been talking that nice about technology stocks here really this morning, because the one thing is when you have higher inflationary environment, high growth tech doesn't do as well. And we've seen that if you can look at Cathie Woods, who is a great indicator for high growth tech, it's actually not too far off of its 52-week low. And then you have commodities that are just blasting off, oil making new highs, looking like it wants to go to $100 a barrel. But sometimes you get the Tim on here and he can break down and look into the market structure and look and see what's under the hood. And that's what we want to do with you today here, Tim, is what's under the hood here. First, let's just talk technology stocks in general.
Okay. Well, and the point from a trading perspective for folks who use Edge, marketstructureedge.com, the whole point is we want to follow the money. Who cares, really, ultimately, where that money is going? I mean, I think it's part of it being a well-informed citizen of the Republic to understand how some of these things work. But ultimately, what we want to do as traders is not confuse busy with productive. A great line that I got from an Israeli finance executive who told me, Tim, we try not to confuse busy with productive. And I thought, that's a useful line. I'm going to make use of that. And it's very easy to get caught up in that, traders, where you think, well, surely tech has got to do well. And then it's not doing well. You see energy doing well. We want to follow the money and take advantage of the swells that it creates in the market and then leave before the wave disappears. So how do we think about this from the standpoint of an inflationary environment? Keep in mind that inflation is nothing more than your money doesn't go as far as it used to. That's the way to think about it. Spencer and I talked, I think I was driving Spencer crazy with this, right, Spencer? I think it was on Thursday. Was it Thursday or Friday? I can't remember. It was
The days anyway, are all one to me, too.
I know. It's the same to me. But I like, this is my point, and we'll talk about energy, because really that's where the money has been. And we talked about it last Monday. I said, if you look across the dashboard at Edge, clearly the best thing is energy. I bought AMR and GM and Nokia. All of those did 6 to 8 times better than the broad market. I bought and sold them all last week. Again, just going where the money is. We talked about GM. I was wrong on one account. It did not become a meme stock, but I was right that it would go up 6 or 7%, which it did. And so we'll talk about where that money is going. Here's the thing to understand, everybody. You want to clear a room, start talking about economics or monetary policy or even market structure. But this is the concept. It takes people and money to make stuff and to provide services. So if we want a lot of that occurring, then we have to have a stable currency. So money has to be worth something predictable. And wages have to be predictable. If the government intervenes and says, here, we'll give you a check, then labor becomes more scarce. There isn't enough of it. And if the Federal Reserve increases the supply of money, it takes more of it to make stuff. So those are the two things that undermine growth. If you discourage people from working and you create more money, it has the opposite effect of what the government is telling us it should have. Well, that's not the stuff we want. Prosperity always comes from knowing what the value of money is so that business can get more efficient and the cost of things can go down. That's what tech has traditionally done. An iPhone goes from costing a fortune to being approachable by everybody. How does that happen? Well, productivity improves. The distribution, the production of goods gets more efficient, and that gets very difficult in the current environment. And that's why tech is struggling. So we want to think about this, traders, and you don't even have to think very hard about it. All you have to do really is look at the supply and demand of money. And if the supply of money to the FANGs is diminishing, don't buy the FANGs. Where is the money increasing? Energy and financials. Why is it increasing? I don't even care that much about it. From a trading perspective, all you need to worry about is where the money goes. Sure, I can tell you why. If interest rates go up, financials are going to perform better. If there are more dollars in circulation, the cost of energy is going to increase. And cotton's at a 10-year high. Look at copper. As you said, Dennis, look at all the commodities. Why are they more expensive? Because the denominator, money, keeps shrinking because we're creating more money than with the output that is supposed to support it. That's why this is all occurring. So if we wanted a beautiful, prosperous economy, we would want money that had stable value. It's not more complicated than that, but that we don't have that, so we have to adapt to it, right? that's how it is.
So, broadly speaking, where is the sentiment right now at this point? Because I mentioned at the top of the show, we do have earnings seasons kind of starting this week with the bank, speaking of the financials, right, and then more so next week. So
Right. Let's look at it. You know, I love to do that. And traders, this is to me what makes Edge very simple. MarketStructureEdge.com. You can try it for free. It's a way to just take 2 weeks and think about supply and demand. If it's not right for you, don't worry. We don't care. We don't require any commitment from you. You can just try it. So here's how we think about this. The money ebbs and flows. And it does so in measurable ways because of market structure, which Dennis is an expert in. That's the rules that govern how trading works. On when I did the demo on Thursday, I use my own Interactive Brokers account, and I showed everybody how my stuff is trading. You know, where's it going, and how come it gets all that most people don't realize it's all fragmented. There isn't a lot of supply in the market actually, but that makes it measurable. We can see supply and demand. So suppose that the market had a supply demand scale of 10. So the closer to 10 you are, the better from the standpoint of excess demand. Well, here's the broad market right now, Spencer. It's 5.1. It's almost dead even. And if we looked at that pattern over time, what we're showing here is SPY.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
The State Street ETF that tracks the S&P 500 and the underlying waxing and waning, ebbing and flow of demand for SPY and the stocks that comprise the S&P 500. That's it. I mean, SPY is really a derivative. It trades in place of the 500 stocks in the S&P 500, so you don't have to own them all. But notice this, when demand hits a peak and begins to decline, leave. You may not be exactly at the top, but you're going to know. When demand bottoms and begins to rise, I had a great week trading last week, then you can return. But return to the things that have excess demand. I'm telling you, it's not more complicated than that. So let's look at our own portfolio.
Hey, Tim, just going back to that chart right there. Yeah. Could you go back to that chart right there?
Absolutely. Let me back it. Yeah, there you go.
If you're looking at like the price and then the levels of demand it reaches, doesn't that look like you're getting lower highs in the chart and then lower highs in demand? So wouldn't that give you isn't that a very bearish looking chart?
Yes, it is, Joel. Yes, that is a very astute observation. And if you go back, let's just go year to date. We started the year with a very strong momentum market because look at the peaks. This is like the backbone of the continent, the Rocky Mountains. We've got staggering peaks. Well, now the mountains are old. It looks like Vermont. I mean, they're just right. They're just deteriorating. And you're absolutely right. That's why I think we are at great risk. We have been in accelerating risk since April of a significant pullback. I've used this line before, so if you know, and it's not because my mental faculties are deteriorating wholly. They are deteriorating. But it's a great line. It's a line from The Sun Also Rises, Ernest Hemingway book, and the two characters are talking, and one says to the other, well, how'd you go broke? And he says, slowly, then all at once. And that, it's how the market falls apart. It does not fall apart all at once and you go, Shazam, what happened? No, it started to deteriorate here. Traders, there are plenty of opportunities to trade. You just have to look where the money is going. If the money stops going to the whole market, is it going to tech? Is it going to consumer discretionary? Is it going to large caps? Is it going to small caps? All of that is measurable. And you just want to put yourself where it is. I only trade 30% of the days the market has 252 trading days in a typical year. So 30% of the time I'm trading stuff. And I crush the broad market by following demand. But you're absolutely right. That is, Joel, you'd look at this pattern and say, well, those peaks are getting weaker and weaker and weaker. Well, that's a sign for us, traders. You should not have all of your money exposed to a market where the demand is beginning to weaken. Now you got to be very selective. And we have options expiring starting Thursday. Thursday mm-hmm. will be index options expirations, Friday, triple witch. Then Monday, a new series. Monday, the new series. In a weakening market, it tends to be when the new series trades that the trouble occurs. And we've been having that happen repeatedly. Happened here, happened here, happened here, happened here, happened here. Is it going to happen again? Well, I can't tell you. But the math would tell us, well, I should be pretty cautious around Monday the 18th. And I can't see, you can't peg the day. It's so massive. The market is so massive, you cannot predict the day that something will happen. But you could look at this and say the supply-demand equation, Joel, is that you're exactly right, is deteriorating. You're exactly right. Yep.
So, Let's
go look at one thing before you do that, Spencer, because I want to talk about a firm. Let's talk about a firm. And then look, here's the supply-demand balance in this portfolio. You can see that demand is well above 5, but flattening in whatever the 10 components of this Benzinga October 11 portfolio are. Energy is the lead sector. Fast trading machines that just want to fool you are the top behavior. Short volume, the supply side, the trend is up. The last few days are down. So that's not horrible, but there's something in there that's helping us. So let's go look at it really quickly. And so if I look at, you know, who's at the bottom? Palantir. You know, Palantir is a one and bottomed and 42% short, and the short trend is up. That was the closing price. It trades $5,500 at a time. Market cap's $44 billion. Key behavior, passive money leaving. And it's in the tech sector. Well, what's the best? Well, look at the ones at the top. It's all, AMR, stock I like to trade, 10 out of 10, 32% short. Look, Diamondback, Marathon, Devon, Hess, all these stocks were up 10 to 11% last week. You want to go where there's excess demand. Now you'd say, well, they're all topped. Yeah. And I think when those deteriorate, get out. But it could give us another 2, 3, 4 days of gains in energy.
How do you know, Tim, when to get out? I mean, you come in and you can buy the 10 because that's the strongest stuff you'd be going into. But how do you know, like, when it's time to ring the register?
Right. Key, right? Entries and exits. All trading boils down to entries and exits. So by rising demand, so, you know, I bought GM on Monday when we, you know, I said, well, it looks pretty good. So when sentiment began to deteriorate and short volume jumped above trend, I left. You could still get some additional gains, but I'm happy with my 6 or 7% gain there and I leave. But it's falling demand. By rising demand, sell falling demand. It's just like surfing a wave. When the wave begins to deteriorate, your ride is over. And it's that simple. And it's not perfect. It's not perfect math. It's just better than all the other math. And that's all you need. So that's it. Buy rising demand, sell falling demand. Be very aware of options expirations and month ends because all the chairs shift one or two to the left or to the right. And you have to realize it's going to distort the wave. But that's how you do it. You repeat that over and over. You don't have to own 50 things. I rarely own more than 4 or 5 things at a time because I'm not smart enough to watch more than that. But that's all you really need to do, traders. It's fairly simple.
All right. Tim Kwas joins us every Monday for Market Structure Mondays. He is the founder and CEO of Market Structure Edge, marketstructureedge.com. Tim, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you again next week.
Good to see you, my friends. Have a good week.
Hey, it's age 52. Unless there's more stuff on our list, let's do some ticker time here.
Ticker time.
If we can from the chat. There's a few things.
We've been so in the discussion. There's been very few tickers coming today. So.
I know.
But we got the first one. Martin's got SoFi going. You know what?
SoFi, I think SoFi got another upgrade today. I think.
Did it get an upgrade? I saw it. Ratings? Like, we haven't looked at ratings for a while.
I think it was like 2 hours ago I saw that.
I'm looking at it.
Did I imagine that?
Came it up.
I thought. Did I? It's possible.
I actually haven't looked at the ratings today here for the most part. So SoFi trading up 4% here. I had it on for a while. I bought it at $14. It had the nice big move to 18, then it pulled back. And actually, I think I sold it a couple days ago because it didn't make a new high on that last candle and made me nervous. So I'm out now, out of my SoFi.
Morgan Stanley initiated at an overweight and a $25 price target.
Needs to get up and needs to hold over the candle to 1709. It's critical for it to do that. It's been holding up very well, though. I mean, I was kind of on the fence on this one, but I did sell my stock a couple days ago.
1709 up to 1717. That was your September 29th high. You're pressing. You got a bid here, but we'll see what happens at those two levels. If in fact it can clear 17, it's had a big run, but. That's where it stopped twice since the end of September. We'll see what happens in today's session. Pre-market highs off of close to that too. That is 1695. They're swinging some volume in this one today. Really good volume.
All right. Levi's asking what a highly on. That's catching a downgrade. Another downgrade this morning. This one is from UBS, downgrade to sell. Giving it a $5 price target. So
this is approaching a new all-time low if it's not a new all-time low. When I always say, just rate these ones down. When stocks are making new lows, you got to go. And you never want to own a stock making a new all-time low, just like you never want to be short a stock making a new all-time high. Because you know what? It's all pain ahead. It's all overhead supply. And you have all the people that have finally just hit a breaking point. So, I mean, it's tough. It's been a tough EV trade for a long time for a lot of these smaller companies. And you're seeing, you know, the repercussions of just too many companies trying to all do similar stuff. And you're seeing a shakeout here of who is going to be the leaders and who are going to be the laggards or the non-survivors. Helion, I want nothing to do with this stock.
754 was the level Dennis was talking about. We have breached that level. So if you want to use that as resistance, you can. It's 21 cents away. I'm sure a lot of people would love to see the close at 782, but former all-time low, 754.
Here's one, Beyond Meat. Now, allow me to posit a theory here. And I know we spent 25 minutes this
chicken nuggets. All right.
I know we spent 25 minutes this morning talking about supply chain problems and how messed up everything is and how that's bad. Let's try this theory, though. Supply chain problems is a bullish indicator, and here's why. It means that there is demand for your product. If you have no supply chain problems now, does that mean that no one is buying your product? I have not heard any complaints, or seen any headlines about Beyond Meat shortages. Not to say they don't exist, I just haven't seen it. But how's that for spin? Supply chain is bullish because it equals demand.
No. This Beyond Meat has been like an unbelievable stock to hold up as well as it has on veggie burgers. I just think eventually there's enough other veggie burger competition that, you know, and obviously, you know, they've done a lot of things right. The companies, you know, I've tried them. They're pretty good burgers. I just can't understand and wrap my head around the valuation. I can't understand and wrap my head. I think the story has cooled off substantially. Is there more pops? Do they get more contracts? Yeah, but every time they get a contract now, it is met with more sellers into those pops. So I think eventually the stock is going to go a lot lower, But I was said that a year ago when the stock was right around the same price, probably like $110, and it went down to like 50. Well, not no, actually, I don't know. Yeah, nah. It did, because we were bearish it before even the before COVID started. And then it came all the way back and it got to $221 again, which is unbelievable. The February, the January of 2021 that bailed out every bag holder and every stock. If you didn't get out during that time, you missed your out. Now you look at it and you think, is this ever going back to 225? You never can say never, but I don't think so.
I bet you if you go and you look on that day when it did go trade over 225, I almost guarantee you that there was a headline about a burger deal.
With McDonald's, that's what was driving it. Some burger deal. Now they're, oh, they got a deal with McDonald's. They got a deal over here. And eventually, I don't know.
There's support. I mean, I'm sure this person is looking at it, you know, like from a buy perspective, a retail trade, you know, most street do. And it's most of the market's been an uptrend. You're leading on the low of the move at 98.90. You've had a couple lows around 100. It's holding up. So it's a low, you know, lower risk long, but you take out this 98.90, this $100 level, your next monthly low comes in at 88.51. And just on the upside, I mean, there's nothing exactly at 105. You had a high just under 105 yesterday on Friday. So needs to get above 105 to have a sustained move to the upside. Just kind of quiet, just blah. It's just like nothing there, kind of like the burgers.
And then just to follow up from Friday, someone just mentioned Dutch Brothers. The analyst quiet period is now over on BROS. So if you look at this morning, you're seeing like a half dozen ratings on Dutch Bros, all positive. No real surprise there. But here, I'll just read you off a few of them this morning. You got JP Morgan, overweight, price target of 47, Barclays. Neutral, price target 40. Piper Sandler, overweight, price target 60. Baird, outperform, price target 56. B of A, buy, price target 55. Cowen, outperform, price target 50. So that's a range of 40 to 60 for Dutch Brothers.
Coffee shop. I mean,
I don't know. I'm limiting my comments on this. I limited my comments on Friday.
When we were, all right, fine.
I don't know.
41 and a half. You know,
it's kind of just hanging out. We got about 45. Maybe it starts to get interesting again, but I don't know.
It had its run. You got some overhead supply. Yeah, you do. Have 50%. I mean, for me, get back over 47, hold 47, maybe, but man, a lot of people stuck in this one. So recent low of the move. You had a low last week at 41.32. So kind of feels like a Robin Hood chart, you know, with, you had the run up after the IPO, just blah, just like nothing. Just holding a level, but not really going anywhere.
All right. It is 9 o'clock. Joel's going to head over to premarketprep.com, which is coincidentally, this is just sheer coincidence that's the same place where you'll be able to find the Saturday extravaganza this Saturday, 9 to 12:30. So Joel, have a good rest of your day. Dennis, again, happy Thanksgiving. Have a good rest of your day.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on a federal holiday for Canadians. And it is time for our weekly IPO segment. Now, I'm going to bring on Matt Hammond from IPO Warriors. What we're going to do is we're going to do what we do every week, right? Is we're just going to preview the week in IPO land. But this will be the last time that Matt is on right now. Starting next week, we're going to move Matt's time from 9 a.m. Eastern to around 12 p.m., around noon Eastern. Matt, good morning.
Good morning, Spencer. How you doing?
Doing great. I figure, you know what, noon, middle of the day, everyone is not so frazzled and stressed trying to prepare for the open, have a little bit more time to talk about these things. So we'll run through the IPOs from last week and this week, and then that's what we'll do. So let's bring up your slides here, which they are. First, I guess we'll start with what we always do, is we'll recap last week. How was the week for you?
You know, the week started out pretty well, and then by Friday I was kind of probably itching too much to get into some IPO plays and broke some of my rules and paid the price for it. So it's all right. I wasn't too aggressive, so bag holding a couple pharma stocks that I specifically said not to play last Monday. Maybe I need to go back and check my newsletter and rewatch the show before each trade, because I often say things that and give great advice, and the times when I take losses are almost always when I go against my own rules. So discipline is an important thing, and I can continue to remind myself and to remind others that there are certain setups that are to be avoided and certain setups that are high conviction where you should go big. And you know, that's just part of the game, part of learning. And like the last guest said, the entry and the exit, those are the two key pieces of each trade. And sometimes not making an entry is the, you know, is the wise move. But there were plenty of opportunities to take some big wins last week. And also just wanted to touch back on the rescheduling. Yeah, noon sounds great. We'll have more time to go into things. I won't be trying to rush through things. Last week we did start to get into something kind of interesting, and then we had internet problems. Yeah. But I do break down these, both the recap of each week. I sent out a newsletter over the weekend, and you can sign up for the newsletter at ipowarriors.com. And then on usually Monday evening or Tuesday, I will send out a more in-depth preview of the IPOs for the week ahead in the newsletter as well. So the newsletter is free. Sign up at ipowarriors.com. Follow me on Twitter. I often will break, especially when there's kind of a stealth IPO or something that sneaks up on us. Those are often the most exciting plays, and I'll tweet those out. I'll send news, special newsletters on those, and you can follow me there. So if you're enjoying this content, if I've helped you make a lot of money, I think I have helped a lot of people with that. And, you know, I get a lot of positive feedback, so I want to keep doing that. But if you want to get more, go to IPO Warriors, sign up for the newsletter, and you'll get updates there. I also update you when we do shift the schedule change, and it's just a great way to stay in touch with what's going on in the IPOs. So this last week we had Volcon, we had Lifetime Group, we had Thesis Therapeutics, and we had Cognition Therapeutics. So all of these were very low float except for Lifetime Group, and that wasn't really a great play. So these low float IPOs, we continue to talk about these. Volcon was low float, and it had sort of that buzz that we look for, that it's in one of those niches where people get excited about just about anything that's EV related. So Volcon is doing EV off-road vehicles. So these are like non-street legal motorcycles and ATVs that are electric. And then that's the play. And the float was, I think, 3 million. Yeah, 3 million share float. So people gravitated towards this. It was a little bit tricky. It debuted at $9 after IPOing at $5. So that was, you know, I kind of like to see that sort of debut premium. It indicates that people are interested in this. It doesn't take a whole lot of demand to send an IPO that only has 3 million shares in the float into a massive run. But this one pulled a little bit of a head fake, and it was sort of just due to stupid luck that as I increased my limit order before the debut, right before it went live, E-Trade, which it sometimes does, rejected my price change. Sometimes you have your price set at, say, $8, and then you see the indication price go up to $9, so you try to adjust your limit order. Because you know, I'm trying to buy these on the debut, and sometimes E-Trade will just go, nope, rejected, and now they've canceled your order. And as you scramble to put in your next order, you know, in this case, it went live, and it kind of unexpectedly went straight down into a halt. Doesn't take a whole lot of volume in either direction to move 10% either way and trigger a halt. So this one halted down, and that's a little bit unexpected. We expect these that do kind of run off the open to do so, you know, really in the first couple seconds when they go live, they'll often halt straight up. So this one, I read the level two data and I saw a big sell order down at 750. So I decided, okay, well, I will play if it goes up, I'm not going to chase it. That's my second rule of trading these. My first is take profits without regret. The second is don't chase. So if this just ripped up, I would say, well, I missed it. You know, damn you, E-Trade. But if it drops down, I'll take that opportunity. So I said, all right, I'll place a limit order at 755. And if it debuts or if it opens out of the halt and drops, then I'll get in because I think it'll come back up. I think I saw a lot of chatter on this in social media. I could see the buy orders had some significant volume in them, especially before the debut. And so I jumped in at 755 and was rewarded by, you know, a couple halts up here. I got out at 1050. I wasn't particularly, I was a little bit spooked by that initial move down. But if you did follow the kind of rule of three, which for me is, at three halts, if I see three upward halts on these, I want to be totally out. And if you did that, you got out at around 1250. If you were even greedier, maybe you said, oh, well, I think this is going to run to 15 or 14 and, you know, maybe sell half your position here, play half of it up here. But the bigger takeaway on this is, hey, when it's low float and it's not, you know, biotech, if it's something like crypto or EV or we had DATS the other week, if it's a Chinese random, just about anything underwritten by Bosted or Network One Solutions, like you play those. So any of these super low floats that have some kind of meme-ish, or in one of these kind of hot trend niches, there's a very good chance that the social media trading groups will pick it up. They all jump in. It's very easy to send these up through a couple halts, and they're great opportunities to take, 50, 100, percent wins. I think the one that we had before that was, the big one was HLTH a couple weeks ago. We made a big play on, and that was, again, low float. It was COVID testing devices, and when we see these, we recognize the opportunity. We have a high conviction. We play them. I mean, if you picked off a big entry at 750, you had a chance for 100% gain in about an hour's worth of trading. So these are the ones I'm looking for, especially even in a cold market. Lifetime Group Holdings there was a win opportunity here. I didn't like it because it had a very high float, 47 million shares. It did get a Cramer pump in the morning, which can help these a little bit. Then again,
he just said he liked it. Is that all?
What he said was, and this is something we mentioned on the show last Monday as well, was that, this is a gym, like high-end gym memberships. A lot of gyms got shut down during the pandemic, especially smaller, single location venues. And Lifetime Group was able to weather the storm. And when people return to the gyms, they're not going to have so many options as they had before. And this, this is kind of like the last man standing or one of. And the idea is, well, now that there's not so many options and people do want to go to the gym, they want to get back in shape, that this will benefit from this. But the thing that made this sort of interesting as a play, although I just basically decided to take the day off last Wednesday, that it opened below the IPO price. So when you see something that has a little bit of interest in it already and it opens below the IPO price, we see a lot of time that it'll fill back into the IPO price, or at least, close some of that gap. When the IPO traders are all, even if there's 47 million shares out there, if they're all in at 18, I don't see, it surprises me when I see something go down from, below IPO price. But in this case, from 1667 where it opened, there's less of a chance that people who just paid $18 for it are going to sell it right away. Then those people are kind of like, well, let's hold this and just maybe the market's just cold right now, which it was. And, there were opportunities to play this for a profit. You're not going to make a ton of money, but, you add up the singles, you get, you score runs, you can win, get wins there. But for me, this just wasn't, it still wasn't interesting enough to sit there and play it. THRX, this one I didn't play simply because, as a general rule, I don't play biotechs. And this one did give you a win opportunity, but you really want to assess your, what is the upside downside risk of something like this? And do you really think that from, if it goes up 20%, do you think it's going to run up another, significant leg from there? I would say that if you were bold enough to play this at all, you would have been wise to, you know, keep a trailing stop loss on the, you know, off the debut, let it run up a little bit, get your stop loss in, raise it as it rises, and take a quick profit. If you got greedy on this one, you know, you ended up getting hurt. The other one that I liked this week, simply because it was super low float and Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's, for some reason, has been getting a lot of positive attention. The FDA, I forget the ticker, but approved an Alzheimer's drug earlier, a few months ago, that, you know, some doctors said it wasn't ready. Anyway, the stock ran, and since then, almost everything.
Yeah, that was.
I think it was ALZ.
Well, there's a couple. Yeah. Casava has the one with the data that may or may not be good. But oh man, I'm blanking on the.
It was like ALHC or ALZH or something.
Oh gosh, chat. I know the chat knows. Anyway. Keep going.
Okay.
But I forget what that biotech is.
Yeah, the point is, I think it is ALZH. The point is that Alzheimer's plus low float has been kind of like a hot trade. So this one had, I think, 3 million. Yeah, 3.35 million. I think they upped it to 3.7 million. So very low float.
It was Biogen. Thank you.
Oh, Biogen too.
Biogen.
Okay. I think there was also, okay, so the point being Alzheimer's plus low float, that's sort of trendy, that's sort of, you know, it's super low float. This was a good opportunity. I missed it because I tried to undercut. I saw everything, you know, dipping a little bit off the debut. So I said, okay, well, I'll go to try to, you know, snipe a little 11.85 entry. Didn't get it, and it ran. It looks better than it was. I mean, ultimately, this is a $1.50 win, so it didn't even make the 2-point. You know, win that I'm usually targeting, but it was a pretty safe play. I mean, if you got in and kept a trailing stop loss, maybe you got stopped out on this big downward wick here, but you still took, you know, a 50 cent or, you know, a dollar win here. Maybe you let it ride a little bit, maybe set 13.50. There was no point in this where you realistically would have gotten hurt. So it was a good play if you took it. And it's just another good example of low float plus something buzzworthy, and these are the kind of plays that, especially in a cold market, these are still opportunities to take wins in the IPO world. So one of the takeaways for the last couple of weeks is, when the market is cold, don't be too bold. Like, you know, don't just, there are times when the market's hot where it seems like every IPO goes up, and it's almost like, well, just, you know, put your boat in the ocean and it's gonna, you know, rise with the tide. When the market is soft and we're in the midst of a correction, it's really a time to be extra cautious. And one of the other signs of this is when you start seeing multiple IPOs, kind of like brand name IPOs, getting pulled. We saw iFit last week. We saw a couple others the week before that got pulled. And we've just seen a lot of brand name IPOs that normally would go live get pulled or delayed. And the reason is, they say adverse market conditions, but what that really means is they went out to a bunch of investors, you know, the big name money players, and said, hey, do you want to buy our stock? And they said, well, we're not really like buying a lot of stuff right now, and we're not super excited what you're offering, so, you know, we'll take a pass. And enough of them say that, they're going to say, well, now's not the right time for us to do an IPO. So when you see a lot of IPOs getting pulled or pricing below range, downsizing their offering, you know, or even debuting below the IPO price, which is something we really didn't see a lot of, like earlier in the year or last year when the IPO market was super hot, it's time to be cautious. And during this time, I'm going to focus my efforts on low float hype memes or longer price, you know, longer positions in underpriced IPOs. So we saw back in, I think it was August, we saw a bunch of IPOs that didn't do particularly well on the debut. But then once the market warmed up again, it was like you got a huge discount on them, and they just ran, you know, really hot. You know, they did really nice runs from there. And those are some of the opportunities I might be looking for. And there's one in specifically this week that I'm, you know, that I think kind of all fits right. That category.
Lay it on us.
Yeah, so we'll get there. Let's, some of these will blow through because we've, like HCTI, I think we've covered this every week for the last 3 weeks. Cloud and data management software for healthcare, life insurance, so the revenue, you know, nothing too particularly exciting. Gross profits, not particularly exciting. They got a trifecta of negative on the operating loss, net income, and cash flow. And the only thing exciting is that, or interesting, is that they reduced the float from 9 million shares to 4.62 million shares. So now this has gone from, well, you know, not particularly big, but not low enough to run on its own, to under 5 million shares. Now I have to watch it and see, are people talking about this on Twitter? Are people talking about this on FinTwit? Are people like talking about this in social media? Because it doesn't take a lot for a 4.62 million share float to run. But then again, it's still selling on Webull after 3 weeks and cutting the share float in half. So if people get allocations of, you know, 50% of what they've requested, or even, you know, 30% or more of what they requested, it's probably not, you know, all that interesting. And in this market, I think we got to take a pass on this one. Biofrontera, this is some kind of skincare for overexposure to the sun, which I can't quite tell if it's sunburns or skin cancer, but their financials are not interesting at all. They are slightly rebounding now that we're coming out of the pandemic. And the only thing interesting here is 3 million shares afloat. Unfortunately, 3 million shares and super low floats have not necessarily done well for companies that aren't in some kind of interesting market. And I don't think skincare for the sun, you know, sounds like sunscreen, or I don't know. It just doesn't sound particularly exciting. Unless I see a lot of people getting excited about it, I'm just not going to try to touch this one. Avid Exchange, accounts payable software. So software as a service for accounts payable. Revenue's up 33% in 6 months ending June 30th. Gross profit's up 52%. So those are pretty positive growth numbers. But the recent trend has been we need growth number, either really, really strong growth numbers, or we need growth numbers with operating profit, net income, and cash flow, or moving very close to those. Without that, we've seen investors kind of shrug them off. We've seen the market be not that interested. I've never heard about Avid Exchange, so it's not in something that is particularly exciting to me. And with negatives across kind of the three, you know, that trifecta, the financial baseline trifecta, even with the kind of moderate float of 22 million shares, I'm just not convinced. I don't have any conviction that this is going to run. And there are other plays that, you know, will demand my attention this week if I'm going to play anything. Okay, Lucid. Sorry, it's not the EV company. It's just a diagnostics company. It's a device for testing esophageal cancer indicators, esophageal maybe cancer indicators. It's not generating any revenue yet because their device is not FDA approved yet. The underwriter is not a company that I'm particularly familiar with, so we're not seeing like Bosted or Network One Financial or even Maxim or Think Equity. So none of these kind of like gimmicky underwriters that sometimes indicate that they might do something kind of manipulative with the price. The float is very low with 5 million shares, but again, unless people mistake this for Lucid Motors, which I doubt they will, this is a pass for me. IHS. This is IHS Group. This is kind of interesting. They buy and manage communication towers, so cell phone towers, particularly in emerging markets. They just bought a big contract in Brazil, or they bought like 1,000 towers in Brazil. They just bought 1,000 towers in Kuwait. And as we know, you know, everybody uses cell phones, so it's a pretty good industry to be in. Revenue only up 15% in the past 6 months, but gross profits are up 60% in the last 6 months on gross margins of 47%. It's a pretty healthy growth metric for a company that is in that, you know, has that positive trifecta across the financial baselines. They have positive operating profit, positive net income, and cash flow. So this is kind of the, you know, I mean, cell phone towers are the thing behind the thing that is mobile phones. Until we get significant service coming through from satellites, towers are the way that the world connects to, you know, each other through their mobile devices. So one red flag is that of the kind of conservative float of 22.5 million shares, 4.5 million shares are being sold by existing shareholders. I always sort of wonder why the shareholders are selling now if they believe that the company and the IPO will be very hot. And it definitely means that there will be more liquidity than, you know, because a float of 22.5 million shares, that's what they're floating to, you know, the IPO sales. They're selling that to the institutional buyers, to the hedge funds and the big money, who they are hoping are going to hold most of those shares. And not, it's not 22.5 million shares are always going to be traded on that first day. But when we see 4.5 million shares being sold by existing shareholders, those shares, to me, tend to make it to the market on the first day. So I like this. I like everything about this except that one piece there. So I have to watch that. I do like this, though. This is profitable, growing, and cash flow positive. So this has, this checks the boxes, ticks the, you know, ticks the check boxes. So I like this one. I have a star next to it and I'll be watching it through the week. GitLab. This is one of those tech companies.
Oh, where, wait, this is this week? Is GitLab? Yeah. Oh, this is exciting. I'm excited for this one.
And I think it's, you know, with merit, this one is, fits that model of, well, if it's going to debut in a cold market, and we might actually get a good price for a longer hold for this. For those of you who aren't familiar with this, this is kind of the main competitor to GitHub. So Git is a version control kind of software repository used in, you know, for developing software. This is something I know a little bit more about than some of the other things because I am a software developer in my day job. And Git is basically a service that, you know, most development companies are going to use. When you have multiple developers working on a software platform, you have to keep track of who's taking a piece of the software out, working on it, test it, you know, and then manage the kind of re-implementation of the work that they've done into that base code. And the main, you know, software used for that is Git. And then the two big platforms for it are GitHub, which is was bought out by Microsoft, and then GitLab. So GitLab has some advantages over GitHub in that it's more customizable. So for larger companies and larger projects, that can be very helpful. Maybe I don't want to use the workflow that GitHub kind of prescribes to you. And a lot of people have been moving towards GitLab. Revenue is up 69% in the last 6 months. Gross profits up 67% in the last 6 months. So this is the kind of thing where the market often says, oh, and gross margins of 87%, you can see how this can scale with, you know, with growth. And the only, you know, downside, but you kind of expect it in a company like this who's trying to grab market share, you know, the losses across cash flow, operating profits, and a little bit of a cash flow operating profits, and shit, I duplicated that. I don't mean that. I mean net income. This should be the last one. So those losses are kind of digestible when you have revenue of this magnitude in a company that is kind of a, you know, very hot, and the growth in this, you know, in this industry is obvious for the next, you know, as long as we're using software and developing software. What I also like about this is they're only floating 10.4 million shares. So this is one of those IPOs that is likely to get priced above range. I think that they're saying 48 to 50 is the price range. They'll probably increase that by the time this goes live on Thursday. And then they'll probably price the IPO above that. And then it'll debut at like 70 or 80.
Nice.
And, you know, I still like it. It's the kind of play where even if it does a day one dip, you have a very good chance of a day two recovery. And I think an even better chance that with just 10.4 million shares, you see, you know, you see this move up from the debut. So this is, and if it doesn't, this is one of the, I mentioned earlier that the debuts that came in the colder market back in, you know, August, a lot of them ran up when things warmed up, or not in August, sorry, in May, June. A lot of things warmed up when the market kind of came back to life a little bit there before the September dip. So
up against the clock here, Matt. Do we have any more?
A couple, but
let's go quick.
Okay, this one I don't really like it. It's you know, unimpressive financials. Think Equity is the underwriter, which is kind of hit and miss. Super low float though, so who knows? Keep an eye on it. Cingulate, in from last week, got rescheduled. Improved drug delivery for ADHD treatments. Very low float. I don't really want to touch another biotech at this point. Augmetics, this is patient care documentation. It's like speech to text documentation for doctors. It's kind of interesting because it could get docs comparison. It is an uplisting, which I don't usually like. The numbers, you know, they have good growth, losses across, you know, the trifecta, and a pretty low float. Maybe keep an eye on it, but not super exciting. My focus this week will be on IHS and GTLB, and still watching this one we can skip. Still watching pets. Something's going on there. Bosted is involved. Just, you know, check my tweets if you're interested in that one. We got cut off when we were talking it last week. But if we got to go, we got to go. Market's coming, opens in 3 minutes. Yep. Sign up for the newsletter. I'll have more on that there, IPOWarriors.com. And that's a wrap for me, Spencer. Thank you.
All right. Matt Hammond, thanks a lot. Joins us every Monday to give us a preview, a recap and a preview of what's to come in the IPO calendar. That's a wrap for us here today. David Green is live now on our channel. The stream will end and redirect to him. Please remember all the information from our show is meant to be used as informational purposes, not for investing or trading advice. I promise I'll have a camera back later today. I'm getting my laptop from the office, which has more functionality than my crappy MacBook Air. So there's that. Thanks, everyone, for bearing with me. Thanks to Tim. Thanks to Matt. Thanks to all of you in the chat. Hit that like button, please, and thank you. And I'll catch you guys later. Have a good day, and good luck at the open.
Did you know nearly all stock price changes of 10% or more result from a single news headline? That's right. News headlines have a unique ability to drive stock prices up or down. These news catalysts create trading opportunities every day. All you need is a little help to reach out and take them. And if you're looking to grow your portfolio, it doesn't matter if your investment budget is small or big. An easy-to-read stream of news headlines will increase your opportunities to profit from price changes in the stock market, consolidate a knowledge-based investment strategy, and grow your portfolio. All you need is Benzinga Pro and its powerful news alerts, price tracking, and portfolio monitoring to make a positive change in your trading performance. We've already helped thousands of retail traders across the world, and they could not be happier. Increase your market knowledge, boost your exposure to big movers, and make informed trades before major price changes. The opportunities are all around you. Subscribe now, and we'll skyrocket your portfolio today.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.